This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight:
the Global Catholic Aid Network Caritas operates in 7 dioceses across South Sudan. The senior officials from the organization have come to Rome to talk about what they consider to be a looming humanitarian crisis. They're saying there is mass starvation. An estimated 1.8 million people have been displaced internally, and they estimate there are 1.5 million refugees there now.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome. Full details coming up.
Also, the UN has opened another drought operation center in Somalia, and Kenya's president says drought-related violence among nomadic herders has reached critical levels.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story: the UN has opened another drought operation center in Somalia. It says the center in Baidoa will be instrumental in coordinating humanitarian efforts in the state hardest hit by the drought. The deputy humanitarian coordinator for Somalia, Vincent Lelai, says the humanitarian crisis in southwest state has become the worst in the whole country. He says it's especially bad in Bay and Lower Shabelle. Also, there are 2,000 cholera cases reported in southwest state. 3 weeks ago, the UN opened a drought operation center in the capital, Mogadishu.
East African leaders are expected to talk about Somali refugees and regional security at this week's summit in Kenya on the Intergovernmental Authority on Development. Some regional analysts, however, doubt the ability of the IGAD group to ease the crisis in the region. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
The Kenya State House spokesperson Manoah Esipisu says the repatriation of Somali refugees will be the main agenda item at the summit.
It will focus largely on the questions of Somali refugees and creating of a conducive environment in their own country so that they can feel safe to go back and contribute to their country's development as well as their country's growth.
Kenya planned to shut the Dadaab refugee camp by the end of May. Dadaab is home to more than 300,000 refugees, most of them Somalis. Tens of thousands have already returned to Somalia. Humanitarian agencies are currently struggling to save lives in Somalia, where more than 6 million people in need of assistance because of drought and insurgent attacks. The aid agencies warn if nothing is done, the crisis in Somalia may become worse than the 2011 famine. The United Nations estimates more than 17 million people in need of humanitarian assistance in East Africa. The region also faces security challenges. South Sudan is struggling with civil conflict and famine, and Burundi has been stuck in a political crisis for 2 years. Isipusu says the leaders at the summit will discuss the situation in those countries and the political uncertainty in the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Regional security is a matter that world leaders have expressed concern in and want Kenya to remain in the pivotal role in terms of tackling these matters.
IGAD has been criticized for being unable to end the South Sudan conflict. The leaders in East Africa also have failed to bring Burundi's political rivals to the negotiating table. George Musumali, the director of the Center for Risk Management in Africa, says the meeting will achieve little.
These meetings have been going on for quite some time, and nothing much has come out of them. Because at the end of the day, they will talk, and then the solutions will always be looking for funding from donor countries. IGAD does not have capacity to deal with these internal conflicts within the region.
As the region copes with drought, food insecurity, and political instability, many Eastern Africans will be watching to see if their leaders have solutions to end their suffering. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Can Kenya's president says drought-related violence among nomadic herders has reached critical levels. Speaking to Nairobi Citizen TV, President Kenyatta says the government has lost patience and now has to act. He says his government will take stern action to protect lives, adding that no one has the right to use violence and illegal weapons to kill others. The Associated Press says at least 11 people died last weekend in central Kenya in violence between Borana and Samburu herders. Police say the Borana stole about 400 cattle, which triggered a revenge attack. The herders are competing for grazing land and water for their livestock as drought grips the area. The Kenyan military is being deployed in Baringo and Laikipia counties. South Sudanese officials from the Global Catholic Aid Network Caritas met with other Catholic officials in Rome today to discuss ways to deal with the humanitarian crisis in South Sudan. The officials say there is mass starvation, with almost over 2 million people internally displaced and 1.5 million are refugees. Reporter Josephine McKenna spoke with the visiting officials today and provides us with an update.
The Global Catholic Aid Network Caritas operates in seven dioceses across South Sudan. The senior officials from the organization have come to Rome to talk about what they consider to be a looming humanitarian crisis. They're saying there is mass starvation. An estimated 1.8 million people have been displaced internally, and they estimate there are 1.5 million refugees there now. But a very serious situation where there is no food, there is a famine, and people are desperately seeking food and an emergency response to this situation. So these officials are meeting to discuss the crisis and look at ways of drawing international attention to what's going on as well.
Also, who were all of the people that they were meeting with?
Well, the senior bishop, Bishop Ercolano Tombe, is the president of Caritas South Sudan, and he had the talks among senior officials from South Sudan and others in Vatican City today. He says South Sudan is collapsing and is in a state of chaos. There's a lack of medication, malnourished children, food scarcity, and so these officials are meeting others in the Catholic Church to talk about strategies and ways of not only trying to build peace in South Sudan, but also step up international aid efforts as well. They've been encouraged by Pope Francis, who has spoken out about the crisis several times, and Pope Francis has also talked about the possibility of a visit to South Sudan, which would help to draw international attention to this crisis, but that has not been confirmed so far.
I understand they also spoke about the severe operational challenges that they have in really just trying to access the remote rural areas of South Sudan to get to people who really need help.
Yes, many of the people are being forced to flee their homes, and the bishops told me they are heading to the hills just to survive. Now, the bishops are very cautious about discussing the level of violence, but they are talking about the incidents of gender-based violence, rape and beatings and deaths that are occurring there. Church compounds are harboring thousands of vulnerable people seeking refuge from violent attacks. The bishop himself has been declaring that he's ready to even risk traveling into remote areas to try and talk to rebel forces and discuss their grievances. But they're also concerned about what they call scorched-to-earth destruction, how people have been herded into their homes, which have been set on fire. Atrocities are continuing even after their death, and people are living in fear. So there are food shortages, partly due to poor rain in parts of the country, but also attacks on harvests and on crops that are in areas where people are still able to grow food.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna. She spoke with me from Rome.
As aid agencies ramp up to respond to a serious drought across East Africa, one analyst with the International Food Policy Research Institute says, in South Sudan, the main cause of food insecurity and famine is ongoing fighting, and not just drought. He says the conflict has frustrated efforts to help those most in need. Reporter Ryan Bior has more from Washington.
Paul DeRoche, Division Director of Development Strategy and Governance Division for International Food Policy Research Institute, says the drought in East Africa is expected to put hundreds of thousands of lives at risk and could push some countries to the brink of a humanitarian crisis. But in South Sudan, DeRoche says the drought will only worsen the consequences of a man-made disaster that has caused famine in some parts of the country.
You've got drought to some extent in central South Sudan, and that has, you know, led to problems in terms of sufficient water for livestock and for people. But you've got a much bigger factor in South Sudan, and that's the civil war, the insecurity, and that's greatly affected households, both fleeing violence as well as hurting their ability to earn money to produce food and so forth.
REACH, a humanitarian research organization, said last month that through data collected on a monthly basis since January 2016, it found that the conflict, coupled with the countrywide economic crisis, caused high levels of food insecurity in Unity State and decreased access to markets. As reported by IREN News, REACH says the conflict has impacted community resilience in Unity State's Leer and Mayendit counties, where famine has been declared, as well as in Coach County, which the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification, or IPC, has classified as likely to experience famine in the near future.
This ongoing conflict has a serious effect on production, both of crops and livestock, and that's very serious, and that's reducing the availability of food. That can be addressed in part by food aid or government transfers, bringing in food to the region, imports. It could be, in fact, addressed by private markets, private trade bringing in grain. But that's only dealing with the availability issue. You also have to address the issue of access to food of households that have lost their incomes. They no longer are producing as much food as they need. And so there needs to be a mechanism to go from bringing in grain or other types of food and actually getting it to the people who need it most.
And DeRoche says that means you need to come up with a mechanism to provide grain and bring it quickly to the people who need it most. In a new report by the Washington-based rights watchdog, the Enough Project, founding director John Prendergast says it's not a matter of a lack of resources in South Sudan. He says billions of dollars have been spent on the country to support peacekeeping forces and humanitarian assistance. But despite all that diplomatic and monetary support from the international community, conditions have worsened, leading to famine in parts of the country because of bad actors in the government. DeRoche believes famine can be prevented from spreading to other parts of the country if the availability of food, access to food and nutrition is addressed.
One thing clearly is you solve the conflict. You let people exist. You let the country develop. But then part of that means that the government and the private sector, to some extent, need to invest in agricultural production. That's both the crops and the livestock. And then also develop the infrastructure, the roads, the physical markets, to some extent electricity, and so forth, so that the production can grow in the future. Household incomes can rise.
So it's not just coming with better relief mechanisms, but raising productions and making markets work better, according to DeRoche. Close to 5 million people in South Sudan are facing severe food insecurity, while 100,000 people are affected by famine in the country, according to the IPC. There are nearly 3 million in Somalia and 1.8 million people in Nigeria facing severe food insecurity. Ayen Bior, VOA News, Washington.
Minutes past the hour. This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America. Warning of a terrorist threat, the U.S. has banned many electronic devices from passenger cabins on certain international flights to the United States. The ban affects about 50 direct flights to the U.S. each day from 10 airports in Turkey, the Middle East, and North Africa. It includes any electronic device bigger than a cell phone or smartphone, so laptops, tablets, and game consoles, for example, medical devices may be exempt. 9 airlines from 8 countries have been ordered to enforce the ban starting today. No U.S. carriers are affected.
The UN Security Council met today on the Democratic Republic of Congo. The DRC has faced political unrest over a presidential election and violence and ethnic clashes in various parts of the country. Among those testifying was Mahamoun Sidiku, the UN Special Representative for the DRC and head of the UN Organization Stabilization Mission, MONUSCO.
The deteriorating security situation in the DRC remains a source of major concern. Violence and threats to civilians are no longer concentrated in the eastern DRC. Community-based violence and inter-ethnic clashes have spread from areas already affected by armed conflicts, such as the Kivus, to Tanganyika, the Free Kasai provinces, Lomami, and Congo Central. Armed group activity in the east has also increased, particularly of late with the resurfacing of former M23 elements. The conduct and coordinated operation by FRDC and MONUSCO against armed groups in the eastern DRC have helped maintain military pressure on the ADF, the FDLR, and FRPI, or FRPI, disrupting their activities. The FRDC has also been involved in actions against elements of the former M23 movement, which had recently crossed into DRC territory.
He says the violence in the country has been made worse by political uncertainty and the support of armed militias by what he calls political actors.
The increasing use of self-defense militia acting along ethnic lines points to a growing sense of insecurity and uncertainty. The risk of electoral violence also remains high, mainly in urban areas. This is likely to rise further the longer the implementation of the 31st December Agreement is stalled, prolonging the current political uncertainty. The spread of violence has been characterized by a significant increase in human rights violations. The year 2016 witnessed a 30% increase in human rights violations compared to 2015, with MONUSCO documenting a total of 5,190 human rights violations throughout the DRC. State agents were responsible for 64% of these, and armed groups were responsible for the remaining 36%. I am particularly concerned by reports of excessive use of force, human rights violations, and the presence of mass graves in the Kasai provinces. I have encouraged the government of the DRC to conduct thorough investigations and to ensure that the perpetrators of these acts are held to full account. MONUSCO, of course, stands ready to provide its full support to the conduct of these investigations. I would like to emphasize again that only political solutions can address and stem the rising levels of violence now being witnessed in the DRC.
That's Mahamoun Sidiku, the UN Special Representative for the DRC and head of the UN Organization Stabilization Mission, MONUSCO. He addressed the UN Security Council today.
Morocco's king has named Sayed Eddine El Othmani from the Islamist PJD party as the country's new prime minister and asked him to form a government. Othmani served as foreign minister between 2011 through 2013 and has since served as the head of the PJD's parliamentary group. Last week, King Mohammed VI announced he would replace Abdelilah Ben Karani as prime minister with another member of the PJD in an effort to break a 5-month post-election deadlock. William Lawrence is a professor of government at George Washington University. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shanawi about the significance of the king's political reforms in Morocco.
It's highly significant. It stems directly from the 2011 constitutional reforms and the 2002 political crisis in which the king named the technocrats rather than representative of the party that had won the elections to run the government in 2002. And this has been a major issue for most of Morocco's political parties since that time. And so the fact that the king named a member of the winning party, the current prime minister, and he failed to form a government, and now the king has to reach into his party for a different representative, is very significant to Moroccan politics and to Morocco's overall reform program.
But would another member of the Party for Justice and Development be able to form such a government?
I think it's highly likely. The problem is that already the ruling coalition was weak and will probably get weaker, and the leader will be a relative unknown for this level of Moroccan politics. And so it makes the government's ability to enact Morocco's ambitious reform program less powerful. There's already been, for example, differences of opinion between two of the leading parties over economic reforms, and these things are unlikely to get resolved in short order with a weaker leadership.
Could another impasse threaten to damage Morocco's reputation in the region for political stability after years of upheaval in the Arab world?
I think this is unlikely because the government's powers, i.e. the parliament's powers, fall mostly in the economic area where gradual reforms are happening over a longer period of time. And so Morocco's defense and interior apparatus reports directly to the king. And, of course, you have the same monarchy in power since the 17th century in Morocco. So overall, the stability of the regime and the position of the regime isn't highly affected, but the impasse does affect Morocco's pace of reform.
Was the rival party's unwillingness to cooperate with Benkiran a resentment of an Islamist party or over other political issues?
That's part of the issue. The PAN party, which is another major party, is the foe of the PJD in Moroccan politics and is close to the king. And there are also a number of advisors around the king that were not too happy with the PJD's greater victory in the last elections. So certainly Islamism is one of the issues, but most of the winning parties in Morocco are willing to cooperate with the PJD party. It's a pro-monarchy Islamist party, and certainly economic issues and political power issues loom just as largely as anything related to Islamism.
Would a new coalition impose some sort of adjustment to the economic program of the Islamist party?
That's the main question. Already the coalition goes from center-right to far-left, the former Communist Party, so it's very hard with that type of coalition to do anything substantial. Morocco did get a big windfall from the drop in oil prices. In fact, of the 22 Arab countries, it had the biggest windfall, bigger than Lebanon or Jordan or Egypt or any of the other oil-importing countries. And it's mostly used this windfall to eliminate subsidies, which was, of course, part of the economic program. But some of the deeper reforms that will take more political muscle, it's not clear whether a new government will be able to enact these with any sort of pace and intensity.
That was William Lawrence, a professor of government at George Washington University. He was speaking with reporter Mohammed El-Shanawi.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. And thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Tuesday on Health Chat. Join host Lenore Modou, reassessing your health stress in 2017 with Ken Red Cross, internal medicine and concierge doctor. For your questions, email us at healthchat@voanews.com. You can also reach us by phone to leave a message or to participate in the program. We will call you back. Dial the international code for the United States, then dial 202-205-9942. The country code is 1. Dial 45 after you hear the station ID. For listeners to call during the show, our telephone number is 202-619-3111. Let's chat this Tuesday at 1730 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.